The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with the assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Hi, book buddies, digital pals, and friends of all forms. This is Claire Williamson, and you're listening to A Little Bit Booked on Fresh FM. We are taking a different tack on books today, one that we all think about and talk about, but never really talk about, if you know what I mean, and that is book covers. I'm joined today by Todd Atticus, a British artist and book cover designer currently living and working in Wellington, New Zealand. Kia ora, Todd. Your Instagram says you're in your blue period, which I feel like needs a bit of an explanation.
Kia ora, Claire. Thanks for having me on. It's funny, isn't it? When you have like a social media account that you try to speak to all aspects of what you do.
In 5 words or less.
In 5 words or less, exactly. And especially if you do multiple things, such as I do, which is I'm a visual artist who also designs book covers. My blue period speaks. I mean, I've designed a few blue book covers recently. Elizabeth Knox's Nightmare comes springs immediately to mind. But in my own practice as a practicing visual artist, I've been using the color blue and a kind of particular shade of this color blue for about 5 or 6 years now. So I'm very much in my blue period. I'm quite deep into my blue period now, and that's what that's referring to.
Blue for the foreseeable future? Or are you already exploring other colors?
Every year, I think this will be the final year of my blue period. By the end of the year, I may have chosen to select another color to use or at least add it to the palette. And every year I don't, I fail to, and I still continue. I mean, the blue period began as a kind of a bit of a tongue-in-cheek thing. And then as COVID happened and the world
all became blue.
became blue, exactly. It felt more and more relevant. And so with every passing year, it feels less right to move away from that anyway. It won't be this year, put it that way.
Oh, well, maybe Pantone will pick like a too similar blue shade for the color of 2027. And then that will be, once they start copying you, that will be your sign that you've set the trend and you can move on.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So you've already name dropped one book cover you've designed, and we'll get back to that. But just for you, have you been reading anything good recently?
Yeah, I have, which you can't always say, hey. To name drop another book that I've designed the cover for recently, I've just finished reading The Valley, Asher Emanuel's. He's a Wellington-based lawyer and journalist, and he's published The Valley with Bridget Williams Books a few weeks ago now. And I say I've just finished reading it because actually I read quite a while ago now an earlier manuscript, which is often the case when you're designing a book cover for a book that will come out in 9 months, a year's time. But I was under the understanding that it had changed quite significantly between that earlier portion that I read and the final published manuscript. So I've actually been reading that, which is quite novel for me, reading a book that I've actually designed the cover for, as the final product. And it's just incredible. Like I knew it was when I first encountered it, and just reading it front to back as the final book, I've just been blown away all over again. It's just amazing. So that's what I've recently been reading. But as is always the case, I'm always juggling multiple books.
Oh, don't we all?
I always have like a fiction title going, or at least one.
Yep.
Maybe some short stories, maybe a book of poetry, and nonfic. So Ashes is the nonfic. And I've been reading, because for my work, I'm always reading manuscripts. And they're always, the very cutting edge of publishing. What's coming out in the next year?
You get the original arcs for all of these books.
But it means that actually I'm often quite, I often crave something that's time tested. So I've been going back and rereading or reading for the first time, for the most part, I guess, some Thomas Hardy novels. I've just finished Test of the d'Urbervilles, which just was so moving, so incredible. Thomas Hardy was a writer from Dorset in England, which is where I'm originally from. So I've just been kind of crossing the I's, dotting the T's, the other way around, with some work that was kind of connected to the county that I grew up in, and just covering some classics off. So I'm about to leap into Jude the Obscure, another of his books, just because, when you finish a book and you're like, ah, that was actually incredible. I need to stay in this world a bit longer. So
All
yeah,
right, so
I've been kind of going forward and back at the same time.
you're kind of balancing out all the new stuff with the classics, and maybe the stuff that you kind of don't ever get time to read if you're constantly being handed new manuscripts going,
Absolutely.
please find the essence of this book in, 3 weeks or less.
Totally. And it's quite refreshing to read a novel just safe in the knowledge that you'll never design a book cover for it. I
Unless they come
mean,
out with a special
maybe I
edition.
would, but I think I'm pretty safe, safe there.
Well, we'll come back to the Valley, which I do want to do a deep dive on you with. And I have seen, I feel like
Totally.
I saw online that they've got into a second printing or reprint or something. So, like, massive kudos to everyone and Asher and the team behind that. But before we get into specific covers, I'd love to know a little bit more about you and kind of your art background and how you even got into this kind of niche of design.
You're right, because it isn't is when we speak about niches, it's a really niche. It's a niche of a niche in a way. And it's not something that I feel like I've always been kind of destined to get into. I have always been really passionate and interested in books, not just reading them, but the physical objects. That goes back to when I first started school at age four. But at the same time, I've always loved drawing, painting. I think when I was even preschool, I harbored a desire to be a quote unquote artist. It's just something that I always felt really at home with, just sitting down and expressing myself visually. And so, yeah, as I grew up and I leaned further into that, I ended up studying fine art at university. When I finished, the only thing that I found that I could pay the bills with was bookselling and designing. I've been a practicing artist for a few decades now, and that is to a degree sustaining, but I've always had these other kind of hustles as well. I was a bookseller on and off for about a decade before I then moved into design as a more serious passion. And I was originally really a political designer, so I was
That was
designing
not what
for
I
the
was
Labour
expecting.
Party here in New Zealand. And I really enjoyed kind of communication design, branding design. A lot of the Labour hoardings from the past decade, I've been involved with, certainly every election year. I've been involved in political design.
Did you get tapped for the spin-off article where they asked people to like rank the bad hoardings? Or the good hoardings?
No, I was talking on RNZ this early this year because of the, or was it even last year? No, it's last year now. For the local body elections and my take on hoardings.
Maybe that's
But
what I was
yeah,
thinking of.
it's a little bit PTSD because just because I spent such a lot of my life working on hoardings, which I was originally quite passionate about, and then I found that once you've designed one hoarding, you've pretty much designed all of them.
So you escaped to books. How good.
Absolutely. Well, it's really funny because the join between my career as a book cover designer and previous one as a political designer actually was through a book, and it was VUP currently, or now Te Herenga Waka University Press, was publishing a book on the 100 years of the Labour Party in New Zealand, and I was shoulder tapped to design that cover. which I gladly jumped on board. At that point, I had identified that I was interested in designing books. And so that felt to me just like a really lovely way of dipping my toe into the water while still having to use the color red and emblazoned
all the
label
brand requirements.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of on brand and off brand at the same time. It was kind of a little bit different, but not so different as to cause alarm. Anyway, I did that. And that was just so satisfying. Having kind of worked as a bookseller for many years, and I was the buyer at Unity Books for a few years in Wellington. So I've been around books, but never with a cover that I designed. So that was just a really lovely moment.
Was it?
And from that point on, I then kind of made it my aim to design more.
Was it at all helpful then to have been selling books for all those years and knowing what people gravitated to, or, you know, you're recommending a book and someone's like, it doesn't look like something I'd like, and then you kind of get to put all of that knowledge into literal practice.
Yeah. I really absolutely think that's true. I'm not sure all of my colleagues in publishing would agree, but
well, I want to list a few books maybe that you have worked on in the past years, and I feel like it's more than people would suspect. Greta and Valdem by Rebecca K. Riley. I'm also just naming my favorites of your covers, so if you're like, why this list? They're my favorites, with the really chunky ampersand. Mm-hmm. Bad Archive by Fiona Felton, which had that cool kind of shell
headphones.
Yeah. You can't see it, but I'm wearing a shell clip. Every recent book by Catherine Chidgey, to come out of To Hitting a Walker University Press. Mm-hmm. The Rehearsal by Ellen Catton, Leather and Chains by Kate Camp, and I mean, heaps more, but those are just my favorites.
Yes, and I should say that some of those you're referring to, The Rehearsal, are kind of rejackets of titles that have been really, really successful over the last few years. Fiction titles that we have printed new editions for, and chosen to use new covers just to kind of keep them fresh and relevant. Because it's actually fascinating, having designed book covers now for almost 10 years, how when you look back in time and you think, wow, that I felt like that was really, at the time, it felt like it was like timeless and it was, you know, just a perfect expression. And then time goes by and you think, oh, fashions and style changes, tastes change. I think, again, with the Catherine Chidgey titles, just trying to make sure that we're keeping up to date with what readers now, when they're going into bookshops, are kind of interested to see and what will jump out at them.
Well, that's a great seg into one thing that I was curious about. Which was, is there kind of a hallmark of a book cover that's designed for the New Zealand market? I know, obviously, you know, the US and the UK, like same books, they get very different covers. And sometimes I'm a bit surprised as to why, you know, why they go such different directions. But here in New Zealand, like what's in right now?
Well, this is also a conversation I'm often having with publishers, and I think it's a really interesting one, because the truth of the matter is, in New Zealand, people buy a lot of international books, and that is to say books published overseas, designed with covers that are designed overseas, and they buy overwhelmingly more books, international books, than they do local books. That isn't to say that, you know, there's a massive appetite for publishing from authors and publishers here in New Zealand. But whenever you look at kind of the best-selling charts, provided they're not filtered for just New Zealand only, they're always really heavily stacked with international titles, which tells us one thing, which is readers in New Zealand are responding to books and covers that are designed anywhere else in the world. Overwhelmingly, the books that are stocked in shops here are from the UK publishers who have a distribution network connected still to certain Commonwealth countries. So a lot of covers designed in the UK are then exported for Australia, New Zealand, etc. And those, yes, often differ really significantly to the US covers. And I always find it really fascinating when you see two covers for exactly the same book, but for different markets. And you very rarely have an instance where something is represented here in New Zealand with a unique design. And I would say Greta and Valdine is one. All of Catherine Chidji's books, which are now finding readerships overseas more and more. Obviously, we have our own covers here. But for the main part, they are New Zealand titles which are published for New Zealand readers here. And I guess our sensibilities, I often hear, oh, that doesn't look like a New Zealand book, if particularly if I've designed something that maybe has it's kind of a bit bold or I don't know, edgy in some way, shape, or form. And I think there's a sense that New Zealand books look and feel maybe a little bit more organic, less showy than more international titles. I think this is a kind of a received wisdom which people in the industry kind of accept as a given. So I often see it as my job to kind of just try to test the waters a little bit more and say, oh, let's have something really fun and exciting. Because, you know, when people walk into bookshops looking for their next read, they're hit by, and I know I feel this way whenever I walk in the doors, just like a wall, you know, of color and shape and, you know, like covers screaming at you from all sides. And New Zealand books have to compete with that. So, you know, I think there's no point in being shy and retiring. Put it
Fair
that
enough.
way.
No, fair enough. And I think, yeah, a lot in bookstores, you know, even still, the New Zealand books get kind of separated out from the general fiction and put to go sit in their own section or their own shelf. So in some respects, they're even removed from that competition and get to exist in their own little sales ecosystem
Ecosystem.
and design ecosystem, which, you know, I know there's some pros to that, like, again, smaller market make it easier to find. But again, I think a lot of cons, you know, why aren't they, quote unquote, good enough to, like,
To
stand with
compete with the
all the
rest.
international, you know, writers and designers and stuff?
I mean, my favorite bookshops do, and I think this is mostly the practice, which is that New Zealand titles are you know, siphoned off and represented in their own section. But those sections are always often front of the shop, which is really great, you know. I do believe quite passionately that we should be championing our authors and the ecosystem of our publishing industry here in New Zealand, which is really, really fantastic. But you know, if you just gaze up into the rest of the shop, you're suddenly then swept away on a tide of covers. So, you know, they are competing even if they are siphoned off.
And I guess when it's, I mean, you know, it is overwhelming. You walk in, you're staring at all these covers, and immediately you might gravitate to one or two. And, you know, everyone says don't judge a book by their cover. We all know that a cover is a big part about why a book gets a first look, you know, in the first place. And I'll freely admit, I found one of my favorite authors as a teenager, Maggie Stiefvater, throwback to some early 2000s werewolf fiction. But because I walked into a Barnes and Noble and I saw this dreamy silhouetted cover with this wolf and these birch trees, and the text was like quite stark, and I immediately went, "What is that? I must know what this is." All that to say, do you ever feel a sense of a kind of pressure of responsibility when you're designing a book? Like, what if I don't do a good enough job, so to speak?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Sorry,
I think I said.
poking it in maybe like deep-seated fears here.
No, absolutely. Because you want to do several things. You want to. I always talk about being ambitious for a book. If a publisher's chosen to publish somebody's work, You want to give that work, the book, like the best opportunity to find its readers. And every book has its readers. And I think more often than not as well, a book's readership is actually pretty wide and pretty broad. If the book's good, there's always the potential that a lot of people will discover and enjoy the book. And I always feel a responsibility when designing a cover to try to find that maximum readership to give it the best start in life. Because, yeah, like just dialing back to what you were saying a moment ago about a cover, maybe you don't judge the book by its cover, but you certainly notice a book because of a cover. More often than not, anyway, and so I do see it that as my responsibility, to create something that will springboard that book into somebody's hands, and then the rest is up to them, and the rest, it's either you're reading the first few pages, or you're reading the blurb, or you've heard about this author, and you've listened to an interview on the radio, or read a review, or whatever. But if I can manage to draw someone's attention to it, then great. But I also have to reflect what's inside the book as well. The what's in the pages of the book, I have to honor. So I often find it's quite a tricky balancing act, to want to make something that's stark and noticeable, and achieves all of those aims, but also doesn't betray what's between the covers. That it has a kind of honesty about what's there, and also visually reflects the author's writing and the subject, which sometimes, if it's really dark or muddled or abstract, it's quite tricky.
Maximum readership, attractive cover that draws people in, accurate representation. It's a very
Yeah, and a kind of honesty and yeah.
It's a lot of things to be balancing in your design. Well, I think that's a good entry into one thing I think you did do recently to give a book kind of the best start in the world, which was your cover story event for
Yes.
And How Are Things With You by Mia Farlane, which is coming out later this year. So this, for people who don't know, is you went and designed a book live in Unity Books Wellington, kind of opening up what usually happens behind the scenes for everyone to see in person and have opinions on. I would love to know a little bit about how this went, and designing a cover on steroids and getting that feedback and those conversations in real time.
God, I didn't realize I was on
Well, I
steroids,
mean, if you said you kind of went through a
no,
hundred,
I didn't.
a whole bunch of
No,
covers.
it you well, actually, that's an interesting point though, because that implies that you don't think I normally go through like a
Maybe I
hundred
just
co
think
book
you have
covers.
the greatest idea from the very beginning.
Well, this is one of the things I wanted to dispel with the
Oh,
event,
good.
is the fact that the final cover doesn't just land smack bam, first time brilliant. It's often quite arduous or difficult, can take time. So I gave myself a week, sitting in the window at Unity Books in Wellington, to make des design this cover from scratch. And even then I was like, maybe a week isn't enough, because I know from experience sometimes it does take longer. And there's often a lot of back and forth, with myself, back and forth with my shared confidants, about covers, and then back and forth between publishers, editors, authors, all manner of people. So yeah, a week sometimes is actually no time at all. That said, it is also rare that I work solely on one cover. So for these 7 days, that was what I was doing. And that did give me a lot of time, which was great. And a lot of, I think during that week, I spent more time talking to people who were coming into the shop and asking me about what I was doing than I was doing designing. But that was like it's like having a coffee break, but 20 times a day. It's quite useful. But yeah, I wanted to lift or let people, in to see what happens behind the scenes, because a cover can be so many different pathways or treatments before you eventually land on that one cover. So for me, it was really important not just to allow people to see me actually working and pushing pixels around my screen and making kind of decisions live there and then, but also every time I had a cover rough, which I was somewhat interested in or happy with, I would print it out and then stick it on the wall next to me. So over the course of the week, this it almost became a collage in itself, just a map of all of these designs, which just filled up this column, and just it kind of started to kind of have a life of its own there in the shop. And what was really interesting was that people would come along, understand that these were covers being considered, and weigh in, which I never get. In fact, that always, yeah, historically, I think I would have been really terrified of that. I think I've designed enough covers now that I know, and I knew during this week, that we would land on something, that a cover would get designed. I don't feel like that's always been something I've felt. So I think I was confident enough to allow this to happen, and people would chime in. And the thing that interested me the most, and something I genuinely wasn't expecting, was that every single cover that I designed had was somebody, at least one person's favorite, which kind of blew my mind in a way, because I always suspected that it would be a bit more objective than that. Like there would be like one or two designs which were the real favorites, and then others which were kind of outliers. But no, it was almost kind of equally spread across the board. And instead of finding that paralyzing, because you know, one might have, it might have just kind of meant that I
Oh
didn't
God, it
know
doesn't
which
matter
direction
what
to
I
go in.
do. Ugh.
Exactly. I actually felt the opposite, which was kind of emboldened. I thought, oh, great, cool. If any of these covers is somebody's favorite, then I may as well lean into my preferences a
And what
little bit
are your
more.
preferences?
Well, that's how the final cover came about, because I basically, by day six, I felt like I'd made lots of designs for this book, but none that really truly kind of lit the fire within me. And so I just then thought, okay, well, I've got some designs which are serviceable, some designs which I like, some that I know the publisher likes and the author likes. So, hey, I'm safe. I'm home, almost home dry. I can stretch my legs and do, just kind of do some crazy things on my screen and see. Start manipulating some of the photos that I'd found early on the week and I'd forgotten about, and just and making some designs which satisfied me. And that's basically where the final design came from. I think I'd been testing ideas all week long, and then suddenly I felt the heat of the impending deadline, but also the, like I said, having been emboldened by the fact that, everybody had expressed their opinion. It was time to express mine.
And so,
And
for
so we got there.
people who haven't seen it, how would you describe the final cover?
Well, considering that it was the product of a very public event, it's actually quite a simple cover. It has a full bleed photograph on the front of a woman in a swimming cap. She's sat at the side of a swimming pool, and you can see over her shoulder, which her back takes up a lot of the frame, and over her shoulder you can see the lanes of a swimming pool. You can see that she's sat and she's looking off to one side, so you see just a slight profile of her face. But I've divided the photo in two. So vertically, just down the middle, splits the photograph between the left-hand side, which is has been reversed out like a photo negative. So all of the colors are reversed out, and the right-hand side, which are the colors of the photograph unchanged. So you've got this kind of interesting split. And then I've overlaid the title of the book and How Are Things With You, each in kind of quite bold, like a sans serif white type. And each word takes up its occupies its own line. So the title falls down the right hand side, and the text kisses the edge of the cover. Yeah, so it's quite simple, It hasn't involved much kind of manipulation. Sometimes when I'm designing covers, I'm drawing, I'm scanning, I'm taking photos, I'm really kind of playing around with material. It's actually a very simple conceit, but I felt like it was quite a powerful visual gesture, and really dialed into some of the more human aspects of the book, which
You've gotten to read already.
which I'd already read. And yeah, I mean, that's really important to me that I do, especially with novels, where a lot of you can have a synopsis of the book, as you would read on on a blurb on the back cover of a book you pick up in a shop, but it doesn't tell you everything. In fact, it doesn't tell you very much. So when you read a book, all sorts of details just kind of fall out of the woodwork. And it's those details that I'm looking to pick up on or just kind of keep logged in my mind, or sometimes I'll kind of frantically note down as I'm reading a manuscript. But also tonally, you get a sense of the book's voice, of the author's voice, of what's actually important, of where the weighting of the book is. And you might not, I might not be able to express all of these things in a cover. In fact, I always am wary about trying to express too many things in a cover. I like to think to try and keep it simple and a simple visual gesture. But it is very good for me to be mindful about the feel of the book, because that is essentially what I'm trying to get across, the feel of something. And that's where I think writing and visual art and design can meet, because they can produce feeling.
And maybe that, man, you're so good at this. Maybe that's another really great seg to go into the valley. Because what I thought is, because I haven't read it yet, I'm on like hold 7 or 8 at the Nelson Public Library. I'm not going to get it for ages. But I love the cover, and I thought I would give you my first impressions about what I thought it was going to convey, and then you can tell me if I'm like on track or
Okay,
not.
hit me.
So you've got this really striking upside down triangle right smack in the middle with this kind of sunset or sunrise, you kind of don't know which gradient, but it feels like it's balancing precariously in this dark void, which so you've got the center triangle, then there's these kind of mountains looming on the side really oppressively, and it's like this fragile bit of safety or this fragile way through, like straight down the middle. You have to thread this needle, and then the valley is straight across the top in that bold white font, which to me kind of felt a little bit industrial, like a nod to maybe like prison stencil font, but without the kind of stereotype of the stencil bit. So, it was something that you felt could have been, it was quite kind of aggressive. And anyways, it, those were my first impressions.
What kind of and do you think it hit the genre or
I do
for
think
you?
it hit the that kind of nonfiction exploration of, again, I haven't read it, so I'm trying to remember the blurb in the back of my head, but these people who are trying to navigate or are navigating this New Zealand's legal system
The criminal justice
criminal
system.
justice system and trying to make their way find their way through life, and maybe you could do a better job than me.
No, I think you've done, no, you've done an amazing job, given you've not read it as well. Given
Just read about it.
that I've read it, one and a half times now. No, you've hit upon some really core elements about
Phew.
this design, which and honestly, it's one of my favorite covers that I've designed. I don't, and you won't hear that me say that often, and like I often have a trouble accepting a cover of mine in the world. I don't know why that is. It's because I think I've seen often the many iterations it could have been. So there's always a little bit of sense of, I don't know, like a compromise, or oh, if only I'd had a few more days, or and because you also send something to print so far in advance of it being published and being out in the world, sometimes you've kind of you've developed other ideas in your head. Oh, I wish I'd picked up on the knife and it's not on the cover or whatever. Anyway, With the valley, I don't feel this. I feel like what I wanted to do was, I mean, like I said earlier, like I wanted to give this book it the best opportunity, because not only is it written, it reads like a non-fiction novel. It's the result of 8 years of Asher Emanuel writing, but also kind of fastidiously following these characters in the hut in Hut City, and engaging with the plight of people who are quote unquote kind of trapped in the criminal justice system, in trapped in that. You know, they find themselves in this kind of repetitious, situation where they are offending for whatever reason. They're going to court. They face the prospect of prison time. Maybe they're bailed. Maybe they then reoffend. And the situations of their lives which have led to this. And it's really forensic. But at the same time, it kind of reads like a psychodrama. Like it's incredibly compelling writing, and I wanted, I'm just going to put it out there as well. It felt like a New Zealand, like it felt like a classic, like in the making already. And I wanted something that had this kind of iconic quality. And like, I've been a designer long enough to know that you can't manufacture an iconic anything. Like,
We all think we
firstly,
can, though,
everything under the
sometimes.
sun exists. Like, it's actually quite frustrating as a creative to do something and then find somewhere else in the world something exactly the same has happened or whatever. So I know that that is kind of a bit of a daft, I'm setting yourself up to fail, but I wanted something that wasn't literal. Like I could have, and I did, go camera in hand to the hut and was taking photos of upturned trolleys in the street or people in hoodies sat on park benches, but so it felt naff.
Like a
It felt
weird
like it was
recreation.
missing. Say again,
Like
sorry.
a weird recreation, like a staged kind
Yeah,
of.
yeah, yeah, yeah. But also, yeah, and too literal, and also kind of missing a lot of the point of the book, which kind of I think rises up out above the day-to-day of these things and kind of is saying, wake up, look at this situation. Let's think about it as well from a perspective of compassion, of also understanding how our legal system is entrapping people. And so I wanted something that also spoke to kind of some of the abstract ideas in this book, not just the lives of these people, but the situation in general. So you kind of called the kind of the black of the cover a dark void. I think that's perfect, like reading of it, like this precarious situation where this sh like light, which I see it as a kind of a sunset of the kind of the fading of the light as kind of hope is kind of dripping out of the equation. But also kind of it's literally showing a valley. I mean, it's a very steep valley. I don't, it's
I wouldn't want to
definitely
hike
not
in or out
the
of
Hutt
it.
Valley, but it is a valley, and it possibly is the valley, not the literal valley where the book is set, but the valley of the criminal justice system pulling people at inside within it and kind of stopping people from escaping from it. And maybe it's the kind of fading range of possibilities that some people have when they get further and further into difficulty and trouble.
But then I love how the back cover is all color. The
Yeah. So
back.
the back cover for listeners is the same gradient of sky, kind of going from this kind of band of red and orange at the bottom, kind of all through kind of gradients to blue. And the back cover is a full bleed to that gradient. I like that because I think it's hopeful. But also it kind of acknowledges maybe a motif which isn't just a black cover, but that kind of sunset sky as something that is recognizable.
So, to get to that cover, obviously you've talked a little bit about, trying literal photography and that kind of wasn't hitting, but maybe you mocked it up anyways. Was there any other interesting tacks that you ended up going down before landing on the kind of the final design.
Yeah, I think I forget now how many, but I think there would have been about 30 or 40 distinct cover treatments for this, some of which involved artwork that the author approached me with. And I mean, I don't often have a very direct conversation with authors about the covers. I usually work via a publisher or an editor. But in this instance, I did have contact, quite a lot of contact with the author. And we were talking about various artworks that might work, and we were looking at kind of covers that use those artworks, and then also the photographic treatments that I described earlier, and using photographic imagery from other photographers, far better than mine. One of the things that actually I love about being a book cover designer actually is being able to champion the visual work of artists, photographers, illustrators who I really love the work of and admire and respect. Like, there's nothing brings me more joy. There's just too many. It's too many. And I love going through, like, going around galleries and thinking, I love this artist's work. I cannot wait until the right manuscript comes that I can try to use this person's artwork on the cover and license it, with their permission, always with permission. Mm. But, you know, like, it's kind of like I'm building up a kind of gallery of artists' work who I love on the covers that I'm designing. So some of those, some of the Valley concepts included photography by Harry Cooley or Russell Klein, two photographers that I really, really admire, that kind of have a very kind of urban, contemporary feel, and were depicting kind of certain aspects of the book. But again, I think I felt they were too literal. They made great covers. I have to say they looked great, but they didn't have the right, punch, and so it came down to a few in the end. But the one that actually ended up winning, the fight, and it's often a little bit of a tussle, was the one that I felt from the very start when I first designed it, that was the one that felt right. It felt like the book. And, the irony being is that I think that took me about 10 minutes to design. Like that final first cover, and it didn't change very much between that initial design and the final form that you find it in. But that felt like the one. And sometimes that's all it needs, is just a really good idea to just kind of pop into my head, which is hard. And that was what I was so nervous about doing in public at Unity, was to say, will the creative tap work today? Because you can't just turn it on and off. It just happens sometimes by complete chance. It just depends on what billboards I cycled past coming home and what that kind of stirs in my mind.
An off chance word by somebody else, and
that's it.
Yeah. A weird dream that you had, you were falling asleep. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that was fascinating. I cannot wait to read it. I'm really, really excited about it. And I saw something in Newsroom. They're already calling it the book of the year, which I think is high praise coming from that kind of the reading room. High praise coming from them. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
Oh yeah, it's really phenomenal, and I think the power of the book relies on everybody reading it and being able to discuss and talk about what's contained between the covers.
So I might close us off with a few bookmarks of stuff that's happening in New Zealand book world. One is that Pushkin Press has acquired the world publishing rights to the Occam shortlisted book Hood's Landing, whose cover I also really, really enjoyed. And that's by Laura Vincent and published by Aporo Press here in Aotearoa. So that's going to get US and UK releases over the next couple of years, which is, I think, a super huge and very cool achievement for a true, true indie press. And the second is a bit of sad news, which is that the retail arm of Bookity Books is closing in August. So June is their final month for subscriptions. It's a hard world in bookland, wherever you're selling. So sounds like Mandy's revamping it to be more of a literary hub than a retail store. So keen to see what she comes up with. And you can kind of grab your last books, use your gift cards, etc. at bookitybookbooks.co.nz. And I think that's all for today. You can follow me as always at Accidental Tokyoite. You can follow Todd at Todd Atticus, which is very straightforward. What is coming up for you in the future that we should all pay attention to?
The new Catherine Chidji.
Yes.
Announced just yesterday from Teheranga Waka University Press. Ooh. Publishing October. Very exciting. And the new Pip Adam, which is coming August. Incredible.
Oh, that's the one that you did four covers for, isn't it? There's like different...
Yes, yes.
Can you tell I'm chronically online?
Which I saw in the flesh for the first time this morning. And it just...
How exciting.
Very satisfying.
Well, thank you so much for coming and talking about your creative process and books and design and these kind of exciting works that I think we're all very keen to get our mitts on. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And we've all been a little bit booked.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you, or your group, would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.co.nz, for our contact details.